factory. We'll link to that at democracynow.org. All Ivanka Trump brand apparel are made abroad. President Trump declared this week Made in America Week. And that does it for the broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, and Andre Lewis. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Cable Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KABU Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Report from Kabul speech by Zahair Wahab on Wednesday, July 26th at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House in Portland. Zahair Wahab, a native of Afghanistan and director of graduate studies at the American University of Afghanistan, will present a critical analysis of the Afghani political, military, economic, and cultural situation. Again, that's Report from Kabul by Zahair Wahab on Wednesday, July 26th at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House, 4312 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This program is made possible by KABU members and support from Beloved, the open-air sacred art and music festival happening Friday, August 11th to Monday the 14th, now celebrating 10 years, located at an Oregon coastal forest venue about 1 hour west of Corvallis. Beloved Festival weaves together a weekend-long musical story, plus workshops, yoga, craft food, vendors, and camping. Tickets and info at belovedfestival.com.
KBOO Portland.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time.
And good morning, good morning. This is KABU, your very own community radio station, KBOO Portland, and you are listening to Positively Revolting. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And together we are here to engage with you, dear listeners. This morning we are looking at the topic of violence against women, the war on women, the never-ending patriarchy, and what it means, really, to be alive, identifying as a woman at this time in American society. So what we would love to do is actually open up phone lines and take your experiences, oh, especially women, to actually help discuss this topic and to surface a whole lot of those attitudes. Identifying rape culture, identifying patriarchy, these are the little voices we hear constantly in our heads. Right?
Some little, some not so little.
Some very, very loud. And so what this show is hoping to do this morning is to make them loud enough to recognize and, again, to ask us what we are doing really now to counter those voices and to actually share some, you know, what is the opposite of rape culture? So, what to share empowerment, to share survival strategies, to share how we get through and, in fact, thrive in a world really hell-bent to clip our wings and to keep us in our place. So that...
But no, we don't get a place.
Oh,
you don't actually have a place.
Sorry, I was taking a little bit of territory there. I'll step back now. You know, this is sort of the thing. As we grow up, for women listening, not news. For men listening, perhaps news. As we grow up, we are consistently taught how to engage in the world, to stay safe, to keep ourselves safe, to mind and guard our purity. And it's really all about curtailing our behaviors because, well, as the mother that raised me said, men are like that. When I reported that an uncle had been inappropriate when I was 10, and there was a hug that seemed a little bit weird and went on in ways that I was not okay with, and I went and I said to my mother, hey, the new uncle that just married into the family, he did this. And she said, well, you know, men are like that. Don't get alone with them. That was the survival strategy I was taught consistently and from the time I was young. Much younger than 10. Men are like that. They can't be expected to change. So we women have to do the work of keeping ourselves safe because otherwise, well, you know, we're endangering the family name.
I didn't even think of that as safety. There's this article, it's kind of a heartbreaking article, Being a Girl, A Brief Personal History of Violence. And I'll just read the first number one. She has different times, but this is, I am 6. My babysitter's son, who's 5, but a whole head taller than me, likes to show me his penis. He does it when his mother isn't looking. One day when I tell him not to, he holds me down and puts penis on my arm. I bite his shoulder hard. He starts crying, pulls up his pants, runs upstairs to tell his mother that I bit him. I'm too embarrassed to tell anyone about the penis part, so they all just think I bit him for no reason. I get in trouble first at the babysitter's house, then later at home. And here's the next time I'm at the babysitter's, the son tries to show me his penis. I don't fight back because I don't want to get in trouble. And here is the real twist about this. One day I tell the babysitter what her son does. She tells me, that's just a little boy. He doesn't know any better. And I can tell that she's angry at me, and I just don't know why. And later the day when my mother comes to pick me up, the babysitter, and here's the mind, blankety blank, the babysitter hugs me too hard and says how jealous she is because she only has sons and she wishes she had a daughter as sweet as me. One day when we're playing in the backyard, he tells me very seriously that he might kill me one day, and I believe him. So it's not just the direct stuff, it's the backhanded...
Yeah,
it's a word I can't use, and mind is the first part.
Yeah, because of gaslighting. I think that's the term
okay,
we use these days.
Okay, very good. Gaslighting. Yeah. Just growing up, and I had, sometimes I forget, because I am around people now in my life that I am not treated that way at all, but I forget about those initial, and that leads to us also being taught to keep quiet and keep things smooth, especially if you're a white woman growing up, keep things smooth, don't let people get upset. you will be betraying something. I don't know what it is, but that kind of inconsistency is so hard. Well, it's hard enough on an adult brain, but on a child's brain, it's insane. So it's a great article. I recommend it. Being a Girl, A Brief Personal History of Violence. And it goes on to where she's in second grade, and et cetera, et cetera, up to 14.
Yeah, and again, that experience is one that many of us, it echoes my own, well, boys are boys, men are like that. It's an excuse because somehow or another, there is no accountability.
Well, and the adults from the adult women from having condone. Been brought up that way condone because it probably started with her at five.
Right, and so we learn, you know, intergenerational patterns mm-hmm. of accepting and normalizing abuse, and. Well, obviously, that is something that we need to surface, we need to talk about, and we need to change. Far from changing it, many lawmakers over the last, many lawmakers for years have been upholding and supporting and making statements that basically says, yes, might makes right, women are stronger than men. Rape is a normal part of sexuality. And, you know, this is just one of those things that will happen. And then we wonder, how is it so pervasive in our culture? Well, our lawmakers themselves actually make crass statements and call it locker room joviality. That one goes right up to the prez. I think
many do.
I think we all know what he has said in many instances. We don't necessarily need to rehash those statements. But when we have somebody elected to the highest office, by whatever means they got elected, who finds it acceptable to consistently talk about his sexual prowess and to consistently talk about women's looks and to judge women based on looks exclusively.
Oh, you mean like telling the wife of the prime minister of France,
right,
Macron?
Carry on.
That his you're in just the tone of that. You're in great shape. Like he's very surprised, and that a blob of yellow flesh like that has the nerve to surprisingly compliment what great shape she's in. I guess she doesn't have the magic genes. He has magic. Well, he doesn't have to exercise or eat well because he has... magic G-E-N-E-S, magic genes.
I figured the spell. Yeah, I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah.
There I am behind my reading again. But again, you're the head of state. You're meeting heads of state and their families, and you're going to comment on women's bodies.
Oh, yeah.
That is wrong. It's not acceptable. And there needs to be a little bit more of a, public outcry over the fact that he's a pig. And I just cannot really put it plainly enough on the air that there is a multi-billion dollar beauty industry that seizes on the idea that there is an unattainable standard of beauty. Women will never actually look like the airbrushed models on the covers of magazines. The models don't look like the airbrushed models on the covers.
The unairbrushed models, yes.
Right.
And they're mean. I work in a hair salon because I'm a hairdresser. And I will not let those kinds of magazines, they start with two letters, and sometimes they refer to people, things like that, because they also... People stand around and look and judge just like they're doing in the magazine. It sort of spreads this spirit of meanness and, well, just a lack of compassion or looking at someone for who they are. Sorry.
Right. Well, so what I was going to say was the idea of the unattainable standard of beauty, and you're right. It does actually. It is very mean.
And it shifts. It's not even beauty.
Well, but what I'm talking about is, and there is this standard that, you know, again, we're judged as to whether we attempt to attain it, in which case we're vain. If we don't attempt to attain it, in which case we just let ourselves go. There is no winning. And basically, I think that is the underarching. The underarching. That's right. The underarching.
That's where arches go.
The underpinning of patriarchy. That really, it's the damned if you do, damned if you don't, be all and end all oppressive system for women. So again, we can try to achieve. We cannot try to achieve. No one is actually going to achieve because, again, that's airbrushing. That's a standard that no one can actually carry. And as somebody who has decided for most of my life that whatever the beauty magazine says has no bearing on me, right? Like, that is somebody else's standard. I don't need to value somebody else's standard. So I have chosen not to do anything about my facial hair, right? So I have facial hair. About a third of all women do. But about, 97%, 98% of the women that do try to hide it, try to get rid of it. For many reasons, I don't. And it's an interesting thing to sort of go through life as somebody who really eschews that beauty standard and what that means. I've actually had men on a couple of occasions where I've decided one of it was one occasion was for a costume ball. I decided to shave and put on traditional makeup. And put on a very traditional fancy dress, and it was a masquerade ball. But for people that didn't know me, I just looked like I was going to a very nice cocktail party. For people that did know me, I was not particularly recognizable as me. And I ran into an acquaintance there, who said to me after a couple of brief conversational exchanges, you know, I don't get it, Ani. I mean, you could be so beautiful. And I said, I'm not sure I understand your point. And he said, well, I mean, you could look like this all the time. And I said, well, that's true. I could look like this all the time. And he said, but instead, you don't. I said, yeah, I know. This is a costume. What's your point? But you could look beautiful. Why don't you? And it was one of those rare moments where I actually did have the right thing to say on the tip of my tongue at that moment. And I said, because then I would have to deal with cretins like you all the time. But that was sort of the off the cuff, glib sort of sentiment. The whole experience really underscored to me how wrapped up we are in notions of what beauty is and what beauty is not. And to look at the feminine standards for beauty and to look at patriarchal standards for beauty and to look at how that also feeds into rape culture and to look at how all of these things add together to keep women outside of the source of our power. And that is the point. Because, of course, once we actually come into our power, we are a pretty amazing force. We are human beings with the full range of creativity and perspective.
Wouldn't that be more fun to be around people like that?
I think so, personally. So if you would like to join us and share your stories and your truths, please do. 503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning. Jump on in to this conversation. We're talking about the war on women. We are talking about ending the patriarchy. We are talking about how this manifests in our lives as women. We are talking about, oh, so many things. 503-231-8187. I also want to go ahead and invite you to follow along on Facebook. You can like our page on Facebook. We are Positively Revolting. You can also follow us in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt.
Here's and while we're talking about rape, also about how twisted, you know, there's a lot of rape fantasies and twisted. I want to read another thing from the A Girl's Life of Violence. I am 14, and my classmate's mother is killed by her boyfriend. He stabs her to death. In the newspaper, they call it a crime of passion. When she comes back to school, she doesn't talk about it. When she does mention her mother, it's always in the present tense, as if she's still alive. She transfers next year because her father lives across town in a different school district. Passion, as if murder is the same as spreading rose petals on your bed or eating dinner by candlelight or kissing through the credits of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
That is another mind blankety blank that we are constantly having to deal with.
Yeah, I think that that's a super important example. Looking at how we, and again, it's excusing violent behavior on the behalf of a male because what, he couldn't be expected to help himself, right? It's a crime of passion. He was so completely overwrought in his emotions that he had no choice but to kill his intimate partner because he was so upset about some transgression.
So much passion. Something.
Yeah. And again, how does that, you know, that mindset is something, one of those things that we really need to unearth. Whenever we see crimes of passion, I think that that is a phrase that we need to excise from our language. That is really not, I like how that went. It's not the same as spreading rose petals, right? That is not.
No, that would be
violence.
No.
Is violence, and that has nothing to do with love, romance, or passion. Just gotta say, violence is violence, and people are expected to actually be accountable to their behavior. It seems so simple, and yet, there are. So many instances of language sort of reinforcing.
Yeah, the linguistics of this is major, and that's what tends to support that sort of behavior on men and acceptance by women, because there's that part, that very sad part of it.
Yeah, it's mind really just mind-boggling. Pointing out some of the more hideous things that
sorry,
some of our
I laughed rather than cry.
You know, it's one of those topics. Pointing out the more hideous things that some of our elected officials said. One of my favorites is Rick Santorum. He's one of
always
my favorite elected officials.
Can
for
always
so
go to Rick
many
for things like
reasons.
This.
And sure, it's been about 5 years since he said it, but that's not nearly long enough. He said, and this is around his position on abortion and the fact that he believes that abortion is never allowable. So what happens should a woman become pregnant from a sexual assault? He said, rape victims should make the best of a bad situation. And so I think that that...
What does that mean?
Well, it kind of goes along with Richard Murdoch, who says that even when life begins in that horrible situation, that would be rape, that's something that God intended to have happen. So I know it's probably not a big shock for anyone listening. I'm not a Christian. I don't really get with Yahweh a whole lot. You know, Jehovah is not my God. But any God that has rape as their part of their grand plan, that also needs to be examined a little bit. And we can actually check out some of that Old Testament for where a lot of this comes from in the first place. And so these these, again, these provide the foundation, right? They didn't invent patriarchy, of course. It's been going on for, I don't know, 10,000 years or something like it. But it certainly does emphasize and reinforce the attitudes. And to see that these folks are, in fact, in elected office and making laws and have these completely messed up pro-violence, anti-women ideas, well, we just want to draw it to light over and over again.
Remember the term backlash?
Mm-hmm, I do.
I feel we seem to be suffering from that.
Indeed. Let's go ahead and backlash again and again. Let's go ahead and give out that phone number one more time. It's 503-231-8187, the number to call. And I want to welcome Craig. Good morning, Craig. You're on the air.
Good morning, and thank you for this important topic. I don't mean to diminish by any means this, but I think it's important to understand different contexts as well. And that, you know, as we do to ourselves, we do to society. And that the disrespect of women is also part of the disrespect of Mother Earth and how we are desecrating our mother everywhere. And we have lost sight of what it means to truly respect the earth and women. And I think it's also interesting and instructive that we have designed systems of thinking that put heaven in the clouds, where people can trash the planet with impunity.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, or go to Mars. We'll just go to Mars.
Whereas the indigenous cultures saw the earth as God, as spirit, as meaning,
home.
And wouldn't dream of trashing it. So I think that there are some very fundamental things in our collective unconscious right now that are at the root of our problems, and unfortunately, I'm afraid some women have taken that path of domination and illusion of control as well.
Yeah.
And we need to get back to spirit and true loving our mother and our and each other.
Yeah, I think that I want to keep focused on women as women sure. and the violence being done against us, because we actually do talk about the planet at other times. It's true. I do believe that the separation of deity and the removal of deity from the incarnate earth probably does. It's an interesting thing to talk about. It's one of those wonderful rambling philosophical discussions that probably I don't want to spend the next hour on. But it is one of those topics over tea that I do get into at times. But right now, I really want to focus on violence done against women and how women are being harmed every day in this world, and the attitudes around male dominance and male power is one of those things that we really need to call out and focus on. I think that there probably is a tie. There, ecofeminism does make the connection around systems thinking that you're making. But again, right now, today, really want to focus on violence against women. Thanks very much for
it.
Apologize. Just want to focus. Thanks very much, Craig. Right. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And while I'm at it, I'm actually, excuse me so much, want to actually mention there is an event happening. I will also post this to our Facebook page. And it kind of goes along with, well, just the idea that we really need to heal ourselves and the world. Awakening our world, awakening to our world. This is an art night, life, art, being, opening night with Rhea Wolf. And that is next Friday, a week from tonight. 7 o'clock at the B Space at Vibrant Studios on 15th and Southwest Jefferson. The announcement starts with a quote from Joanna Macy: "More basic to the great turning than any ideas we hold is the act of courage and love we make together when we dare to see the world as it is. Rhea writes, we are alive in interesting and dangerous times. Great changes are sweeping across our planet, and it can feel difficult to understand our role in life. How do we deal with feelings of uncertainty or fear in the face of such overwhelming circumstance? How do we find joy and inspiration in the midst of challenge? And how can we take part in healing ourselves and our world? I will go ahead and put this on our Facebook page. You can find it there, facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. And you can also search for Rhea Wolf. She guides the Work That Reconnects practice group at B Space. We've talked a lot about the Work That Reconnects with our friend Barbara Ford. It is the work that carries on Joanna Macy's Deep Ecology. There is a second event, Healing Our Hearts, Healing Our World, a workshop that reconnects, and that is on Sunday the 30th, also at B-Space. So again, you can find out more information about that on our Facebook page. And I thank Rhea Wolf for writing in with that information.
Well, let's take some calls because the...
bases are loaded,
bases
we call
are loaded,
it.
As they say.
Because I love sports metaphors. I've never watched a baseball game in my life. I take it back. I did once.
Well, we have,
but that's another story.
It sort of works for us. All right. Annie?
Good morning.
Welcome to the
linguistics.
Yes.
I had, excuse me, an encounter, and that was the way I dealt with it. And this is what happened. So I was unlawfully evicted from my home after a long legal battle over title, which is still ongoing. And so this was definitely unlawful by Multnomah County Sheriff. I don't know why I'm laughing, but in any case.
Because you just have to. So it's more healthy to laugh.
Laughter.
Yes, yeah. It's healthy to laugh.
So by the time this spectacle, I figured out exactly, I was doomed on this day. I was so full of fury and righteous indignation and the fact that there were four uniformed armed deputies, a plainclothes detective, the landlord, and then this actually went on for about an hour because then I called the ambulance and they came to me to the hospital, and then there they tried to drug me as I was just sitting on the gurney.
Well,
goodness.
That was quite a story. Let's go to John.
Let's move on. Yeah. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, so I don't want to take up too much of your time, and I love everything you're saying, but I was wondering maybe to hear your thoughts on, because obviously Hillary would be our president if Mr. Trump had lost. And I just don't see her as a real feminist. I see her using feminism for her own gain. And even... Bill Clinton, his history with Monica Lewinsky is certainly troubling. And I just don't want to take up too much of your time, and I'll take the comments off the
Thanks.
Phone.
Thank
you. Know, it's not that I don't think she's a feminist at all, because, I think we would have done better with Supreme Court and blah, 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 but she's a warmonger. This is my problem with
That's my problem, too.
And a neoliberal.
Yeah. But, as far as feminist ideology, yeah, she's a feminist.
Yeah.
Do all feminists think alike and agree on all things? God, no. There are many, many, many branches of feminism, and it would be, to me, a far more interesting world if, in fact, we spent time talking about, the types of feminism and how they serve different ideologies. Basically, she's a corporatist, and she way loves the military. Apparently, certainly as Secretary of State, she did. But she's a feminist in one stripe of feminism. That would be a capitalist feminist, liberal feminist. You can call it by many names. It's not my stripe of feminism. I've always called myself a radical feminist, but now that name is rather besmirched because many folks under that banner of feminism are exclusive anti-trans thinkers. And to me, that just continues our oppression, and I want nothing to do with that. So I don't know, maybe I have to find a new label.
I was going
to
say, do you have a new one yet?
Well, Anarcha. Anarcha-feminist. I think we've been calling ourselves that for 24 years, so that still works. It's an interesting world. There's not one monolithic, yes, that is a feminist stamp of approval. There's a whole lot of room for us to talk to each other. Because, again, feminists, some feminists are capitalists and don't see any contradiction in that. I do. Because to me, at the very root of feminism is egalitarianism. And I believe that egalitarianism is, in fact, impossible under a capitalist system. So,
haven't seen it work yet.
Yeah, no.
And we're in late stages.
Yes. So that's, I guess, my possibly not too satisfactory answer to your question. Yes, she's a feminist. I'm still not wild about her because the rest of her politics it'll kind of leave me flat. Right.
As they do many other people.
So say I.
Okay, well, right. Should we go on to Robin?
Let's. 503. I'm going to go ahead and give out that number again because it is wonderful to engage you, listeners. Please do call. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Call on in.
Like Robin did.
Good morning, Robin.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to mention, when we talk about feminism, and yes, we need to center capitalism in this conversation, we also need to talk about colonialism. A caller referenced indigenous folks and beliefs around centering the feminine. And we also need to keep in mind that thousands of indigenous women are missing at this moment, and it's not reported. And the same goes for black women in this country. And we need to center those women and those voices as well in this work, and it seems to get erased. When we talk about it, we seem to talk about it in this essentialist way that erases the realities that these women are facing, and to also realize that this is based in white supremacy, and the violence that is happening to those women are because of that.
We've been talking in terms of patriarchy, but it's sort of hard to separate those two.
You can't, because what happens and how this was created to hold white women to a certain standard was in order to deny women who were colonized their humanity.
I agree. And so, again, where do we go at this point? I think it's important, again, we provide this platform to talk, and the conversation obviously needs to go much, much deeper and much, much further. So where do we take it? Where do we go?
Where do we take it? I think that in these conversations, we always have to keep that at the center, the realities of women of color. And we should be leading the work, right? Because we are the ones that are experiencing this most impacted by patriarchy and racism and and heteropatriarchy.
Yeah.
The whole idea of gender in the first place is a notion that was created out of this concept of patriarchy.
Absolutely. I think that really looking at intersectionality is of the highest importance. And I think that's sort of where I started to go with my comments around the stripes of feminism. Because, again, in my world, in my view, you cannot actually advocate true egalitarianism and capitalism. You have to, it was actually my understanding of feminism initially, in the ways that I was taught feminism by professors at PSU, that really got me thinking very critically around issues of class and race and heteronormative thinking, and how all of these oppressions really are interrelated. You cannot separate any one of them out because they are used against us. They divide us. They attempt to create little mini hierarchies where some people will be placated because they at least get some goods, and so they're going to not ally themselves with others. It's very deep, and it's a conversation that is so very vital and so very important. I guess that's what I meant by where do we take this? It's like this is the conversation that needs to happen everywhere.
And I think where we can take it is recognizing that safety looks different for where you are located in this hierarchy of patriarchy and white supremacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is also very true. There's a quote, I believe, from Harry Hayes, who said, "Unused privilege is a tool in the hand of the oppressor." And so recognizing that I have white privilege, I know that I need, it is my obligation, it is my responsibility to push in circles where I can get maybe a little bit further, and to try to make sure that people of color can be safe and can also organize in ways that work and make sense for them. And I think that it's so important to, again, always look at, because I think when we talk about systems of privilege and oppression, a lot of times people think it's a zero-sum game, that either you have privilege or you don't have privilege. And I think that in each and every one of our lives, we can find areas that we do have privilege and areas that we don't. And it is really important for us to examine that and to actually move in the ways that our privilege will allow us to get further to make the changes that are so necessary to make.
Well, I hope that the conversation doesn't just get stuck in that privilege where it stays, right? And
right.
I also want to mention just a gentle reminder that as a person of color, as a Black woman, I called in to mention this, and it wasn't mentioned before, and that's also where the work needs to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't just be my responsibility to bring it up.
True. Thank you very much for your call, and thank you for doing that work. Very much appreciated. And 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you would like to join us as well. You know, it's a really, really important and super deep conversation to try to undo systems of hierarchy and oppression, and that is actually what this show is dedicated to and based on. This morning, looking at specifically violence against women, and of course, all of the ways that it reaches and branches into our lives, and into all of our lives as it affects us differently. There is an incredible story that a listener has sent to us that broke last week, apparently. And that would be a state lawmaker in, what do we call that? Massachusetts? No, I'm sorry, New Hampshire. A state lawmaker was charged with sexually and physically assaulting a 16-year-old girl because she wanted to meet with him to discuss politics. Republican Representative Eric Schlein of Hudson, New Hampshire, has been charged with a misdemeanor count of sexual assault and two misdemeanor counts of simple assault. Simple assault.
And sexual assault. Like they're different. Okay.
Yeah. He apparently drove the girl... He she wanted to meet with him talk about politics. He had struck up a conversation with her after he had noticed a political sticker on her laptop and suggested they could meet and he could introduce her to some other politicians, help her network. So this is a 16-year-old girl. The legislator is 29. And when she got into the car with him, he proceeded to, according to the police report, he scared her with sexually explicit talk, sucked on her fingers, and groped her inner thigh. The girl told the police that Schlein described the list of sexual things he wanted to do to her, including, quote, rape her mouth, end quote. He asked her to go to his apartment. She declined. And he then asked her where she wanted to be kissed. She answered her hand, quote, because it was the farthest part away from her body. He would not let go of her hand and was holding her hand firmly enough that she could not pull it away. So, yeah, there we go. That's a state legislator in New Hampshire and his what he thinks is his right to do with his power.
Nothing new to see here.
And you. 503-231-8187. Let's talk to Jane. Good morning.
Hi. I don't listen to your show, and I'm sorry. I feel like I don't usually listen to your show, so I don't know you guys. But I appreciate your show today. And
thanks for tuning in. We'll say
I would
that.
Have too many. I'm sorry. I would have too many stories to tell, so I feel like I just had a couple things to say about the history of the sex industry, and I just don't hear a couple of other things brought up globally, and that's the Ottoman Empire and the sex trade, because those are white sex workers, and that's kind of North Africa, and I guess it's like the history of the world can look very different when people don't delve into it. I happen to have a very different ethnicity, so I know weird history. And it's like one of the things that comes to mind about white patriarchy is recently in Japan, they were talking about the sex workers, the Korean sex workers in World War II, and they the mayor of Osaka refused to apologize for
the comfort it. It women.
Necessary part of war, and he was called the not. There was a lot of outrage in Japan about him because it's a very, very touchy topic in relation to the two countries. But I guess there is like a global kind of theme, and it kind of goes throughout cultures, even without, the United States. And as someone who's Native American, I can honestly say people may not know our stories or what it actually looks like, because you've got a lot of diffusion of Native Americans and interactions in really awful ways. And 82nd Street just used to be horrible for Native American women. There's a ton of violence against Native American women, and a lot of people are biracial and mixed race from a lot of different ways. And so, yes, this conversation gets very broad, very fast, but I just feel like overall violence against women is so it's so minimized, and then we walk this weird space of having to be hypersexual, and yet it's like it's both. It's like it's celebrated, and yet it can be just the most degrading thing, depending on what's happened to each of us individually. And I appreciate for you talking this story, and wanted to recommend a song called Leaving Tara by Pura Fay for your listeners, for anyone who's interested in a Native American singer. She's from North Carolina, and thank you for having this conversation today.
And her name was Pura Fay?
Yes.
Excellent.
Thanks, Jane.
I'm not familiar with her work, so I want to check that out. Again, that call touched on so many so many things. Our attitudes around sex work and sex workers, our attitudes around sexuality in general. Again, it falls back into that category of damned if you do and damned if you don't. You know, it's the whole virgin whore dichotomy that women are supposed to right fall into. There's so much wrong with that being held up as a dichotomous spectrum, first of all. There's so much wrong with valuation of so-called purity and devaluation of so-called sexuality, demonization of it. And gosh, I mean, where do you even go? I, for myself, really, really, well, I also think that the twisted notions around sex and sex is bad is actually a part of patriarchy. And I think that when you really see folks who are the family values, what do we want to say, the Christian right representatives, family values reps.
Fundamentalist in any religion whatsoever, sure. Usually tends to.
Here in this country, it's we tend to know it as the Christian right. But you know, when we see that branch of thinkers, and then we actually see that, oh gosh, those same politicians are the folks often as not caught saying these horrific things around justifications of rape and sexual assaults. There's that connection, right, between demonizing sex and being closeted in your own self and your own desires, which then, in an unexamined way, tend to be let out in ways that are very destructive.
If you oppress things, they will explode.
Kind of like that.
Kind of like that.
And in my head, I immediately start thinking of the Victorian era. And all of the stories that go along with that. 503-231-8187, the number to call. Also, again, on Facebook, you can find us Positively Revolting. You can also follow in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. Yes, Lynn.
So, with our friend from Being a Girl, a brief personal history of violence, we're up to her 18th birthday, and some of you, this sort of reminds me in a personal way, and I try not to do that, but here we go. On my 18th birthday, my cousin takes me out clubbing. She's 18, she's going out clubbing. While dancing, a man comes up behind me and starts fiddling with the straps on my flousy black dress. But he's sort of dancing with me, and this is my first time ever in a club, and I want to play it cool, so I don't say anything. Then he pulls the straps all the way down, and everyone laughs as I scramble to cover my chest. At a concert, a man comes up behind me and slides his hand around me and starts playing with my nipple while he kisses my neck. By the time I've got enough wiggle room to turn around, he's gone. You know, of course, I just remember things like that as a young woman and not knowing how to handle it. Now, of course, first of all, those things don't happen to me, but I really know. I think I had to turn around and put an elbow in someone. A friend's birthday party, a gay man grabs my breast and tells everyone that he's allowed to do it because he's not into girls. I laugh because everyone else laughs, because what else are we supposed to do? Say something.
Say something.
Say something. Say something fast. And I think, you know, people that I know anyway at this point, but I hope that folks are teaching mothers and fathers their daughters to say something, and that is behavior.
Well, and again,
I don't have to put up
with. I'm also hoping that mothers and fathers are teaching children to respect boundaries.
Oh, yeah. Start with that. Yes.
Yeah. And again, putting the emphasis and the responsibility firmly on keeping boundaries and respecting them, not shoving bodily parts onto your playmates, not touching them in ways that are not, let's just say, fun for everyone. You know, I mean, teaching five-year-olds consent culture, you know, again, you're going to scale it to what that child's experience is going to be, right? And so we want to talk about how, you know, how things either feel good or they don't feel good. And how you don't do things with that, that other people don't want you to do. You don't walk up and bite somebody. You don't walk up and do other things to them, right? That play is play, and that some things are not.
Your freedom ends where my nose begins.
Yeah, kind of like that. And so, again, I really want to check out how we deal with responsibility for this. I have a lot of friends who talk about Woman Strength, which is a great program, and how all women need to learn self-defense, which is awesome. Sure, that's great. But again, looking at teaching everyone to respect consent, that is huge. And hearing, you know, young women and girls when they say, whoa, that person just touched me in a way I don't like, you know, to have the excuse, well, that's how boys act, or he's just a boy, that's not ever okay or acceptable. That is, it's a time to support, you know, the person who's been hurt, and it's a time to check out with the person who isn't respecting boundaries to say, hey, that's not okay. You can't actually do that. The fact that you're a boy doesn't give you an excuse.
Right.
It seems so simple. Well, let's go ahead and talk to Ray, shall we?
It's because we've worked on it for many, many years.
Good morning, Ray. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. Hi. How you doing?
Hi, doing all right. Good.
What I have to say is probably much less intense than what you've been talking about, but I wanted to share what I've been experimenting with or doing and just hear your thoughts about it, maybe off the air, if that's okay.
Yeah, we've got a couple minutes. You got to make it fast.
Okay, so quickly, I've just been trying to use a gender-neutral language, and because I've made some mistakes with some folks recently where I've called them the wrong gender.
Mm-hmm.
My mistake, but so I've been experimenting with gender neutral, and it's making it so much easier. So I just wanted to hear what your thoughts were, or if that's relevant to this at all. And, thank you.
I would love to actually look at a show about gender soon.
That's
a whole other topic, though it does again interplay and intersect with this one. It's funny. I asked a person a few months ago now, who I was getting to know, I'm like, you know, I have used a pronoun, but I haven't actually asked you what pronoun do you prefer? And she said, well, she's good with being with using female pronouns or with using gender neutral, which would be usually at this time, the most common would be they and them as a singular. And she was good either way. And we had a little talk about pronouns, and for both of us who are gender queer, you know, what we prefer, what feels right to us, and strategies for dealing with this in a way that's sensitive. And I love the fact that she said, you know, she's been thinking about this, and she's figured everyone gets they'd until they tell her differently at this point. Doesn't matter if you know, if you look like the most center of the cis spectrum, that you're going to get they'd, and then you can go ahead and say, actually, you can call me whatever other pronouns you might
want.
Pronouns
have become very difficult.
And I kind of like that strategy. Pronouns, I don't think they're difficult. I think that people need to actually understand that language is a living thing.
Right.
And that sometimes language changes. I've had such arguments with good friends who I have not argued with anything else about around the idea that they and them can be used in the singular. And in fact, it used to be, if you want to go back to some Middle English, but that's beside the point, that somehow or another, upholding a grammatical law that they and them shall only be for the plural and never for a gender neutral, and you're going to get gendered whether you want it or not, so there, because grammar is more important than human feelings. And I got to say, no, that's wrong. Language changes, and if it's not comfortable for you to use they and them in singular, check yourself. And if you think that grammar cannot change, I want you to actually discuss Beowulf with me in Old English. So
there you go.
That's my thoughts on pronouns. We are out of time. So many topics, barely scratched the surface. We do this every now and again, and with an hour, we just sort of open the can and let some things out. But there's always so much more, unfortunately.
Thank you all for your...
Systems of oppression aren't going away fast, so no. Let's keep talking about it, and let's keep bringing it to the forefront, and let's keep taking this further and further and deeper. Thanks for listening.
And thanks for your participation in our show this morning.
Woohoo!
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. This month, the Finance Committee will meet Monday, July 24th at 4:30 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the screening of Promised Land, July 24th at 6:30 p.m. at the Rivergate Church in Portland. Promised Land is a social justice documentary that follows two tribes in the Pacific Northwest, the Duwamish and the Chinook, as they fight for restoration of treaty rights that have long since been denied. The film examines the way that government and society still look at tribal sovereignty. Again, that's a screening of the documentary film Promised Land, July 24th at 6:30 p.m. at the Rivergate Church, 7634 Southwest Capitol Highway in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, it's 9 o'clock. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming up this morning on KBOO, first, it's Veterans Voice Radio.